Prices shift, petrol jumps, shares fall. A company cuts jobs and suddenly the business story is everyone's story.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. From Monday to Thursday on ABC Business Daily, we break down the biggest stories in business, finance and the economy and why they matter.
Then on Fridays, I'll go deeper on That's Business, with the people making decisions, taking risks and shaping where the economy goes next.
Find it all in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Have you ever wondered why you behave the way you do in relationships? Like, do you have a tendency to hang on too tight, afraid you might be abandoned? Or do you desperately need to play it cool, pushing people away in case they hurt you? Or maybe you're one of those smug bunts who can safely connect with others without any sense of jeopardy and without losing any of your sense of self. The three different styles of how we relate, anxious, avoidant, and secure, form the basis of what is known as attachment theory. You might have heard of it. It's kind of like woo-woo, but with a fair chunk of science backing it up. There's a famous book about attachment styles, and if you've ever spent any time in therapy, your psychologist might have brought it up during a session. The theory is based on how we form bonds with our earliest caregivers and can provide a lot of answers as to why we behave the way we do in adult relationships. And let's face it, despite our mostly good intentions, it's sometimes hard to figure out why we are the way we are and, importantly, whether change is possible. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about attachment styles. Helping us to understand attachment theory is Dr. Hannah Corral, a registered psychologist with a PhD in neuroscience. She says in attachment theory, there are three main categories.
There's the securely attached child, which is someone who is able to give and receive love and interaction in a secure, stable manner. There's anxiously attached, which tends to reflect clinginess, persistently chasing and having trouble regulating those anxious emotions. And then there's avoidantly attached, which is pushing the emotions down, dismissing the emotions and pushing people away.
Wow. Okay. I know which one I want to be.
Yeah.
And I know which one I want my children to be.
Yes.
Attachment theory is born out of the work of the Canadian developmental psychologist Mary Ainsworth and an earlier dude researcher called John Bowlby. In the 1970s, Ainsworth set up something called the Strange Situation Experiment.
The way they did the experiment was a mother would go into a room, play with their child for a little while. A stranger would enter the room.
Researchers would look at how the baby reacted to the stranger in the room, and then the mum would leave the room. All eyes were now on the baby.
Most children would cry, most children would get upset. That's very normal, that's very common.
After a short time, the mother would come back into the room. And this is the part that researchers were most interested in. How does the child reconnect with their parent?
So the securely attached child will need a bit of reassurance, a bit of comforting for a few minutes, and then they're able to go back to exploring and playing with toys.
Okay.
The anxiously attached child would be very upset, have a lot of difficulty returning to exploring the room and playing with toys. They would continue to need that reassurance and cuddling and close connection. And the avoidantly attached child is the one that doesn't really react, and they might even push their parent away or not engage with their parents. It's almost like they're realizing that they're self-reliant and pushing that caregiver away from connection. Yeah,
okay.
It's quite striking to observe.
Beyond anxious, avoidant, and secure, there is a fourth, more recent category of attachment style, disorganized, where the child would sometimes respond by wanting closeness and other times by wanting distance.
And the disorganized attachment style was thought to relate to when a child's really gone through quite like a bad trauma or something that reflected trauma in the parenting style.
So what was the thinking prior to this?
Yeah, so before attachment theory was appreciated, there was this idea that loving a child, cuddling a child, touching a child is spoiling them. and you can love them too much and that will spoil the child. So there was a mentality where hospitals would have strict visitation rules with parents. They couldn't come after certain hours, they couldn't stay, they couldn't touch their child. Orphanages during World War I weren't giving the children support. They were just, you know, trying to get them to be resilient by not cuddling them or holding them or giving them any comfort or intimacy or love.
Okay, well, this explains why boomers have so many issues. Thankfully, by the 1950s, researchers started to come around to the idea that being caring was actually really important for kids and would not, in fact, turn them into spoilt monsters.
They need that comfort and support to thrive and to grow. So it's a complete paradigm shift.
That is huge. So the theory is based on how children respond to the absence and return of their mothers. Does that mean that men don't count? Where are they in this?
There's definitely a place for both parents and both caregivers, whether that's, you know, two mums, two dads, mum and dad, whatever it is. Mm. And I think the way that it's come out in the research, primarily it started with mothers, because they were, you know, in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, they were the primary caregiver in a lot of cases.
But as Hannah says, both parents are important in how a child develops their attachment style, as is the relationship between the parents.
If they can see their parent is afraid of perhaps their partner, and, you know, what comes to mind is, say, things like domestic violence relationships. So you have a parent who's afraid of another parent. Mm-hmm. The child is very in tune with that. They can see that mummy is afraid or this person is afraid and therefore I feel afraid, which is hard for a child to understand. Complex feelings there. So you can sort of see how that might impact a little growing mind.
Do they become more anxious?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or avoidant. It depends on the style of the relationship and the attunement of the mum. Those things show up through lots of cues, including nonverbal cues, and the baby can be in tune with that.
Yeah.
Even little babies.
Wow. Yeah. So according to attachment theory, Hannah, your early attachment style as a baby is what you'll take into life. Is that right?
Oh, gosh, we've got to be careful with the wording here, because I feel like yes and no. So they are changeable, they are fluid. So there are links to suggest that 12-month-olds who were then interviewed when they're 21 years old echoed the same attachment style. So when they were anxiously attached as a baby, they continued to have those insecure attachment styles as an adult, a young adult.
So yes, there are correlations between how you were parented and the way you are in relationships as an adult, but Hannah says that's not where it starts and ends.
You can change your attachment style, you can grow, and you can adapt over time. So it's not fixed.
First of all, that would require some self-awareness.
100%, yes.
Right, but let's say you are self-aware and you're like, I've got to stop being so avoidant or so anxious. How can you change that?
So awareness, yes, that is the key. Number one, maybe you notice the pattern that you push people away when they get close. Maybe you notice the pattern that you get very anxious and very clingy and quite sensitive to any perceived issue, and you're picking up on that pattern within yourself. The second step would then be quite a bit of work, working through where the origin of that has come from, often stemming from childhood. Mm. And that may be best done in something like a therapeutic relationship with a psychologist or a counsellor, because that's, you know, big things to unpack by yourself. And if you can do it with support, why not?
We have a question here from a listener about the influence that our family dynamic has on our attachment style.
I'm the youngest of four kids, and I'm wondering if your birth order might affect your type of attachment style? And is it often that you might have different attachment styles to your siblings, or you might have like very similar attachment styles? So yeah, thank you.
One of four kids and the baby of the family, which by the way is my position as well. So does that have a big influence?
You're also speaking to me because I'm one of five kids and I'm the fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, so second youngest. I suppose the brief answer is, every child within the same family can have a completely different attachment style, because the way you were raised at that point in your parents' life was in fact different to your siblings, which sometimes is very validating when you have other siblings who perhaps don't agree with your version of what your childhood was like, because they did have a different childhood to what you had.
Totally.
And that's not really well acknowledged, and it's hard for families to sometimes understand. You can be in the same family and have had a very different experience.
Do parents tend to pass on their own attachment style to their children, or can it be different depending on the relationship they have with them? So if the mum is anxious, mm-hmm. does that mean the kid is anxious?
In short, not always.
Okay.
It depends. So we have the capacity to work on our difficulties and issues. So you might be a mum or a dad listening right now and recognizing an insecure attachment style within yourself. That doesn't mean you are definitely going to make your child have that attachment style. And I think there's already a lot of pressure on parents. We don't need to add another level of pressure. Similarly, a parent who's avoidant might inadvertently reinforce to their child that they need to downplay their emotional needs and have an unspoken agreement where I'll be here for you, but you can't be too demanding of needing my emotions or needing my affection.
Hannah, as a parent, how do you change your patterns if it's something that you're concerned about?
Notice your own triggers and don't let them dominate your behavior. You're in the driver's seat of your behavior and you can make choices about how you react in those moments. And you might just need a little bit of help to get to a healthier place. So again, I'm coming back to therapy. I know I keep harping on about that, but I guess I'm a psychologist, so that's my MO.
Sure. Elsa, our amazing producer of this podcast, has a question for you.
I've just come out of a relationship where it felt like I was the avoidant one. He was really keen and really available all the time. And sometimes I felt like it was a bit too much. I'm just newly dating again and I'm seeing this guy. It's very early days. And my brain is totally occupied with whether he likes me. I'll check my phone to see if he replies. And I'm focusing on his approval even more than how much I like him. So I'm wondering, can your attachment styles change relationship to relationship? And have I become anxiously attached?
Big question.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful question. I think so many people can relate to that as well. There is this idea that your attachment styles can shift and may not be fixed. So there can be people who fluctuate between anxious attachment style and more avoidant attachment style, depending on the trigger.
Yeah.
I suppose there's some work there where you can recognize maybe that sometimes when we have that insecure attachment style, we can confuse anxiety and stress for the spark of romance and love.
Oh, no! What do you say, Hannah? So wait, before we get to that, so first relationship, Elsa was feeling sort of fairly muted and avoidant.
It sounds like, and I don't know, I cannot diagnose Elsa, so I don't know the details, but let's just go with the scenario that we have. Boy who is stable, consistent, offering consistent attention and love, and somebody perhaps with an insecure attachment style might react to those attempts of connection and love with that fear of abandonment. Then when we cue the new relationship and they have met somebody who is perhaps emotionally not as connected, not as available perhaps, and they are then triggered. And that pursuit, that anxiety that comes from unrequited attention or affection or love is triggering them to then engage more with that person, where they're thinking, I'm going to lose you or I'm not worthy, and therefore I have to put even more effort in and even more attention in.
Do women tend to be more anxiously attached than men?
Good question. I think typically it would be more seen as a female has a more anxious attachment style. And in, I suppose, media and popular culture, it's often that cliche that the woman is the clingy one or the one who's too much.
Yeah.
It's not always the case. Women absolutely have avoidant attachment styles as well. And men can also have anxious attachment styles. But I do think in society there is a tendency to push men towards not showing their emotions. And that might lend itself to somebody who has an avoidant attachment style.
Mm. And it sounds like, just to go back to our last voice memo, Elsa's current boyfriend or current whatever you call it situation is avoidant as a way to keep her interested?
Yeah, it can be. So the classic model of, say, an avoidant attachment style might be that the relationship begins and it's quite lovely and that person seems really into you, very affectionate, very interested. Sometimes that can creep into a bit of love bombing. And then all of a sudden, the rug can be suddenly pulled out from underneath you and they just don't seem interested.
Right. Is there anything we can do to prevent that?
In a long term.
Handcuffs.
Have they left the country? In a long-term stable relationship, people can have effective, long-lasting relationships despite having insecure attachment style. And that is both people having the vulnerability to meet in the middle and talk about what their triggers are. So we have a discussion about vulnerability and what is triggering me and how we can work on that as a couple. That's not easy if you met them on Bumble or Tinder or whatever like 6 weeks ago. Not easy. If you've been with that person for maybe several years and you have established that foundation, that might be a conversation that's much easier to have.
Okay. We've got another question about attachment styles in romantic relationships.
I go hard and fast when I first meet someone and I've never been able to just casually date. All the people around me, they go on multiple dates or they'll be talking to multiple people, but me, I'm committed to one person before I hardly know them. Does that mean I'm an anxious attachment?
It sounds like it. I've got to stress, I don't want to come across like I'm diagnosing. I cannot diagnose from a soundbite.
Yes.
But the tendency in an anxiously attached person is this core belief that the world is not secure and people who love me are going to disappear. And being overly invested too soon in a relationship can be a sign of anxious attachment. And it can also be something that causes that person to, I suppose, pull back because it's too much at too soon.
Yeah, okay. Do you think we put too much importance on attachment theory in our romantic relationships?
I think there are certainly different perspectives on how and why your relationship patterns might be occurring. Mm. And I think there's a good appreciation for patterns.
Okay.
What attachment style does is it allows us to recognize repeated patterns in how we're interacting with other people. Yep. And it gives you a framework from which you can do further analysis, further insight checking, and try to improve. So I don't think it's a bad thing to have that framework to help you understand why you might be acting the way you are. It's certainly not the only explanation, but it's a really nice starting point.
Okay. Would you recommend putting it on your dating profile?
Hi, my name's John. I like pillow flights, walks on the beach, and I'm insecurely attached. You could put that on your profile. It'd be very honest. It would be very vulnerable.
One of our listeners, Nika, has noticed a pattern of hers that she wants to understand.
So I have a habit of going for emotionally unavailable men. They'll give me a little bit of a sign that they like me and then I might not have even noticed them or been super interested, but then it ignites like some sort of chase in me and I'm suddenly interested in them and kind of fighting for their affection. So I guess, why do I seek relationship comfort in emotionally unavailable men and why do I continue to pursue it and tolerate unfavorable behavior as a result?
Can relate to what Nika was saying. I think it sounds like there's a pattern there of, again, that anxious attachment style, which is not just pursuing, it's also reassurance seeking. So it sounds like if that's something that maybe you relate to, I suppose that inward reflection of one, recognizing my trigger, taking that pause, breath, before I engage in the behavior, before I send the text message, before I, make the phone call, before I engage in the reaching out behavior or the reassurance seeking behavior from the object of my affection, maybe I'm soothing that anxiety in a different, more healthy manner.
Hannah's not talking about drinking to soothe the anxiety, not cutting yourself a new fringe, and certainly not sending 75 texts at 1 a.m. to the person who's treating you mean to keep you keen.
Breaking that cycle or pattern where the desire to overdo it, to be disproportionate to the level that the relationship's at, we're just kind of soothing that need, which is that child voice who's saying, the world's going to leave, they're going to leave, cling on to them so they don't leave you.
Right.
Soothing it in other ways.
But just to return to Nika, who's dating and scaring men off by the sounds of him. So how can she calm that farm? Like how does she self-soothe? Or I just picture somebody sucking their thumb when I hear self-soothe. Mm. But how does she soothe herself so that she can quiet her needs and not scare people away?
Yumi, that question is like fundamentally tapping into the universal mental health, like how do I get through this moment, this emotion that I really don't like? And for everyone, it's different. There are strategies that we know that pretty good. Things like, I know that everyone rolls their eyes when a psychologist says this, but mindfulness strategies, breathing strategies, taking that reflection time. What those things do is they slow time down. You know how long a minute goes when you have to just breathe?
Some people, like me, might prefer to get out for a walk or hit the gym. And there's also turning to the people who we love and trust.
Talk to a friend, talk to a parent, talk to a sibling who can give you the reassurance and just help you work through those emotions before you do something.
I've got a question for myself.
Okay.
So I've got four children. The youngest one's 10 and I'm single. And I've been single for 5 years, it feels like. I think that's right. I don't have any need to get attached to anybody. Is there an attachment theory read of that situation?
I don't think that there's anything negative, inherently negative about, you know, somebody who feels fulfilled. You don't have to have a partner to be fulfilled. But at the same time, if I would say, Yumi, if there was a longing or a desire to connect, then if that was something that you felt fear or anxiety about pursuing, then I would say, oh, and why is that?
Right.
You know, why is that?
Yeah,
is there something holding you back? Is there that part of your life that deserves Yumi, who's not just the incredible businesswoman or the incredible podcast host or the incredible author or the incredible mother, but also Yumi the woman, Yumi the person who has this other part of your life that maybe also deserves some time, attention and care? And that's kind of something where only you can really answer that question.
It's a very beautiful question. I feel very seen and appreciative of it. I don't know what the answer is. I think I'm just that Yumi that you described so beautifully is in a casket and is dead.
Well, okay. So now I have more insight.
Does attachment theory come up in the therapy room much?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of psychologists will have a bit of a mix of what therapeutic style they're using to work with their clients. Most therapists are tapping into something that's occurred in childhood and helping us to link that back to our patterns as an adult.
Yeah.
And in many cases, you can link those behaviors or those emotions that you feel to something that happened when you were younger or like the way that you were raised, the patterns across your childhood. So anyone who's looking at their own history, that is such a fantastic source of information that I really think is worth exploring.
And that's why so many therapists say, let's talk about your parents. Is that right?
Tell me about your mother.
Tell me about your mother. I love that. There seems to be a hierarchy of attachment styles, as we've discussed. Secure is at the top, then anxious and avoidant underneath. But are there positive things about being anxiously or avoidantly attached?
Yes. I mean, they wouldn't exist if there wasn't an evolutionary reason why these things are occurring. So if someone's listening to this and thinking, oh my goodness, maybe I'm anxiously attached, maybe I'm avoidantly attached, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's all bad. There are reasons why a person might react with, you know, moving closer and trying to lean into a relationship, and that might be really appropriate. There might be times where you recognize that a relationship's not quite right and it's important to pull back a little bit. So there are healthy times to respond like that. It's a good reaction to have. It's when it's more of a long-term pattern that it's a bit of a problem, and when it's maybe getting in the way of forming those longer relationships.
What Hannah is saying is that your attachment style is just one part of the complex person that is you. And if you're a parent who's worried about the impact that your behaviour might have on your children, be kind to yourself.
The most important thing is good enough parenting and being there good enough most of the time, trying to be consistent, and how you repair. If you have made a mistake, how do you repair that after the mistake? Because it's also about modelling a range of emotions to our children. Everybody gets sad. Everybody gets anxious. And that's okay. And this is how we process and deal with those emotions, which is a lovely gift to give to a child.
This is what I do when I'm a blubbering mess and I pick myself up, wipe myself off, say sorry, and continue on.
How do you repair? That's probably the most important part of becoming a well-rounded adult is, how do we repair? How do we mend when we've made a mistake?
Yeah.
Because everybody makes mistakes.
It's just so true. Thank you, Dr. Hannah.
Thanks for having me.
Understanding ourselves helps us make sense of what is happening when we venture out into the world and bump up against people like dodgem cars at the show. Bumpity bump bump. When we know what we're driving, it can really help us figure out why some bumps hurt bitterly, why some people seem to operate with less stress in the same situation, and why some of us want to just drive our little cars right out of that showground, which you know would never actually happen because the vehicle would stop working and you'd be foolishly stuck there sitting in that goofy little car, smelling of Dagwood dog and fairy floss and wishing you had never left the house. For me personally, I'm not sure if I'm driving a car or a wooden coffin, but it is pretty confronting to interrogate why I'm so grossed out by romance that I seem to have driven a stake through its heart. That sure sounds avoidant, but I'm going to avoid talking about that anymore because I have business to attend to, okay? Rounding up some clowns and dunking some Dagwood dogs into the deep fryer. Bye! Bumpity bump bump. Bye. Don't look at me. Bye. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Our executive producer is Tamar Cranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.